Hello, and welcome to the Wavemakers podcast, where we get to know the ocean and water tech and the people behind those blue technologies that are destined to become climate solutions. I'm Tamara Khan, your guide through this wondrous world of blue tech here on the American Shoreline Podcast Network. So last episode, my guest spoke about a focus on how the ocean is a carbon sink and seaweed is a big part of the solution that people are trying to use to enhance that removal of carbon from our atmosphere. And that's very important because the ocean is basically a lever for climate change. Without the ocean, the world would be warming even faster. It'd be way hotter now. The ocean plays an important role in our environment, no matter what. We literally couldn't survive without it. So I think we've talked about that enough. This episode, I want to dive deeper into the relationship between climate change and water, just ahead of the UN's World Water Day, which is March 22nd, because climate change is water change. If you think about it, we have these extreme heat events and drought causing too little water in some areas, and then in other areas and at other times, we have flooding, sea level rise, too much water. And these are all water issues related to climate change. I wanted to have my guest on today because he's part of running a platform that's bringing together water innovators and experts and even funders to try and address these issues and bring solutions to the table. And I think they're doing so very well. I actually recently attended an event that they held where I got to meet, or virtually meet, Philippe Cousteau, which was really exciting for me, grandson of Jacques Cousteau. So I can attest to their great work, but I really don't know that much more about what they're doing. So I've got Peter Ulrich here to help us understand. Peter, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tamara. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. And thank you for coming on to talk about HydroDAO. I always start here on Wavemakers with a little bit about your background. So let's get to know you first.
Yeah. So like you said, I'm working on HydroDAO right now. And it took a little bit to get here. My original background was I was fully intending to be a medical physician. So I really wanted to pursue that career because ultimately you get to help people every single day. And so as a pre-med student, I really went through, checked all the boxes that you need to. I was a caregiver for a man with cerebral palsy for a few years and did a lot of research in different labs, particularly with stroke victims and with wound recovery. So that aspect eventually brought me to pursue a master's in global health at Northwestern. And in that degree, I had a focus in water sanitation and hygiene, or WASH as it's colloquially known. And as I neared the end of my degree, my final research paper was about how increasingly harsh climate events in the Peruvian Amazon cause a higher prevalence of dengue fever and diarrheal diseases. And we can kind of associate those droughts and floods, those harsher events, to climate change. And so the connection between water and human health and the environment really attracted me. I saw that water is really the center of so many things, and especially how it's at the center of human health and environmental health, two priorities that I wanted to have in my career. So I kind of just decided to focus on water in my career. So once I neared the end of my degree, which was in June of 2022, I joined a program run by my current co-founder and partner, Stuart Ruddick, who had a program called the Water Emissaries, which was basically to help educate graduate students and undergraduate students on the water industry. That brought in different featured speakers and talked about the different issues within water, the different solutions in water. And Stuart and I, we clicked immediately, and I decided to help him with the operations of that program as well. And eventually we got to wanting to create what we've got today, which is HydroDAO, and eventually the Hydro Fund as well. So that's kind of how I got to water and why now I'm just absolutely in love with the water industry. And Tamara, you and I were talking a little bit before, And I just love people in water. They seem to be just so altruistic and know that what they're working on is really, it's so much larger than any individual, and it affects our lives in so many countless ways. So I really like the water industry, and there's some exciting stuff happening in it.
Peter, what a fantastic background check on you. That is so interesting to me, to go from I want to be a doctor, basically, and find your way into water is such a perfect example of a pathway into this workforce and this industry. Thank you for sharing that, because that's quite the cool journey. And the water health and human health aspect is something that really fascinates me as well. So I hope we can circle back to that at the end here. But I agree with you very much that this industry is super interesting. There's all sorts of people to meet and connect with. And I actually really like Taoism has a saying that the best are like water, and just how it benefits all, and they don't compete, and they may dwell in lowly spots, but that everyone else scorns, but they're there for the best, for the good of the whole. So I'm obviously paraphrasing, but if you ever feel like getting a little deep, look up Lao Tzu and his opinions on water and man. As for your mentionings, holy sea cow, you got into this water world, you met Stuart, you said through Water Emissaries?
Yeah, that's right.
And that's a program for college students, or what, like age level, age group?
Yeah, so Water Emissaries is for undergraduate and graduate students. And what's really cool about that program is it's supposed to be for really a diverse set of backgrounds and a diverse set of people. It's, you know, for instance, I came in with this sort of medical and global health focus, but there's a lot of students that go in with engineering backgrounds or, I guess, biology, chemistry, and even business backgrounds. And so it definitely involves an application process to get there. And there's a heavy focus on wanting to have a lot of different perspectives join those programs. What's cool about that too is that recently Water Emissaries has partnered with Water Signatories, which is a program that basically does the same thing, but with high school students. And so those two together are forming what's called Water Core, CORPS. So that's really going to be a program that's run by that Water Signatories group, still brings in undergraduate and graduate students, but is meant to be educating this new wave of water professionals. You know, in the water industry, we've got, there's a crazy percentage of people retiring, especially in municipal and industrial water. I might get this wrong here, so don't quote me on it, but it's something like an estimated 40% of water professionals are retiring in the next 5 to 10 years. So there's a huge need for more professionals in that industry. And there's a need just for different perspectives and greater diversity within that workforce too. So that's what Water Emissaries and Water Signatories are trying to do, is really bring in those new perspectives and educate people on water while getting people excited about the water industry too.
You're really touching on something that for me is kind of like my secret thing to do with this podcast is workforce development. And I really appreciate that perspective that you're bringing. It is important to have the diversity piece in blue tech in general. I think we've seen time and time again how much we need different perspectives and different skill sets to come to the table to drive things forward successfully. So that's a perfect segue into how we kind of reach all these different people. So you're talking about high school students, grad students. What about with HydroDAO? Who are you trying to kind of, maybe you should start with why is it called HydroDAO and what you guys are aiming to do?
Yeah, absolutely. So HydroDAO, for background, is really a community of people that is meant to bring together all these different stakeholders in water. So right now, the water industry is pretty siloed. People in drinking water are not often talking to people in waste, certainly not talking to people in ag or industrial water. But really, the water we use is all the same water. And as we start seeing that things like forever chemicals, PFAS, infiltrate all areas of the water industry, whether that's in oceans or in the plants that we, in agriculture or in our wastewater, drinking water facilities, and even in the fish that we eat and the animals that we eat, it really covers so many parts of our lives. And so we're trying to bring people into the same space so that we can collaborate, that we can help support innovations and support each other's work within water to help make sure that that we are having greater efficiencies, we're having greater production of water and access to water and purification of water. And it has to happen across sectors. So at HydroDAO specifically, we have really several areas where we try to collaborate and educate. So we have monthly events that we call the Oceanside Chat, sort of a play on fireside chats, where we bring in a featured speaker and they talk about something interesting in the water industry. And then we have small breakout sessions where it's about 2 to 3 people and we actually get to know each other on a personal level. And we talk, of course, professionally about how we can connect. But largely, as I mentioned, people in water really do want to collaborate. They really do want to connect. And so we create those monthly events, both as, again, an educational piece, but also as a way for people to get to know each other and to potentially form these partnerships. You know, like you said, Tamara, we had Philippe Cousteau last week, and that was really great for both what we do in trying to connect people, but also getting our message out. Because Philippe is, you know, I would say he's famous in the water world. He's famous in oceanography for sure. I mean, his grandfather is extremely famous for ocean advocacy, for diving, one of the co-founders of Scuba, in fact. And so, you know, bringing that kind of level of engagement or that level of, I guess you could say, fame to our speaking events has really actually gotten a lot of attention to the work we do and the ability to collaborate among a bunch of different sectors. So that's one aspect of what our community does. Additionally, we have a weekly newsletter that we put out that, you know, talks about all the water challenges, the water solutions, really anything that has to do with that space, in a weekly newsletter that goes out via email. And we have a online chat platform where we can actually in real time discuss different events as well. So we'll put out news stories, we'll talk about different new technologies that are out there, and we'll also promote people who are in our community, different members and the work they're doing, and try to make sure that these partnerships and these collaborations are happening. And that often just takes exposure. It takes people knowing that there are interesting projects out there and that there are ways for instance, a large company to partner with a new startup that's helping with efficiencies in water systems or helping measure water systems better. So that's really what we're doing with that community aspect. And you had mentioned the name DAO, HydroDAO. And that's got sort of an interesting background on how we got there, actually.
Well, let me pause you for 1 second there, Peter, because I think just to spell it out, it's DAO, HydroDAO. And I'm glad you're going to explain, because I'm not very familiar with the, is it decentralized autonomous organization?
Yeah, exactly.
DAO. So, and you guys aren't really acting as a traditional DAO. So please go ahead into that as well.
Yeah, of course. So while we have that community aspect that I just talked about, on the side of that, we're also developing a fund that we'll be calling the Hydra Fund. And that's really supposed to be acting like a traditional venture capital fund that invests in all the most promising, groundbreaking technologies that we think are both going to be really important for the water industry and for efficiencies and access for people, but also going to be a good return on our investment. And now I bring that up because initially this community and fund were supposed to be, they were supposed to be one and the same. And so we're going to be raising this fund largely with almost like a crowdfunding type structure. And a DAO, or decentralized autonomous organization, is a crypto slash blockchain native way of creating a community or way of gathering people into the same space. So decentralized and autonomous basically means that when people buy into a community and they are members, then after they buy in, they have a voting right or an ability to change the community or to vote on how it moves forward. And there's no real top-down leadership structure. So that's kind of how the decentralized works, is there's everyone really has a say in it, in how an organization is run. And the autonomous is that when people vote on something, that the outcome of that vote happens automatically. And so when we were raising this fund initially, we thought that way of setting up an organization seems like the future. It seems like that's a very fair way to run a full organization and to get people involved and to really give people a stake quite literally in the game, and to have people really care about the performance of companies that we wanted to invest in. Now, as we, just transparently, we ran into just legal hurdles of setting up that type of structure as a fund and community. And there is practical issues of talking about how we make sure that, you know, especially if there's companies that want an NDA signed and want to make sure that their information is confidential, it was really difficult to manage how we would get all those community members to be basically under this umbrella of, you know, confidentiality and such. So we strayed away from that structure so that the fund and community are entirely legally separated.
That's fair. I see a lot of startups go like, you know, you start off with one aim and it sort of becomes something else as you learn the lessons. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah. And yeah, totally. And the idea of this DAO, or decentralized autonomous organization, we still absolutely, you know, want this to be how we handle our community. We really want people to participate, and people have been participating in a lot of our events and even our online chat platform, whereas we don't feel like we have to be the ones really running things. And while we still do in this pseudo DAO-like structure, we've really seen some amazing participation from all over different sectors contributing to our events, where they'll say, even fact check our featured speaker, you know, our expert speaker. We'll have people come in and say, well, I don't know if that stat is correct, or they'll say, hey, check out, you know, this work that hits on the things you're talking about. And so in that way, we've really been trying to make sure that we're not the ones gatekeeping this sort of information to people, or making sure that we're the only ones that can put that sort of content or discussion out. We're really trying to make this a participatory space. So, so far we've, I think we've had that, and it's been really exciting to watch that develop.
So I see what you're doing here, and I really want to like frame it for listeners that it's not all pie in the sky. I think it's sometimes hard to understand that this space that you're creating to allow people to come together, particularly in the industry, but it sounds like educating people who aren't in the industry and allowing other voices to come in as well. It's really important to drive innovation forward and sort of dictate what the future looks like, because this does affect everybody. So I really appreciate that you guys have developed this sort of platform that's open. And as you mentioned before, the water industry itself can be so siloed. So I agree. You know, a lot of people actually within the industry seem to separate ocean and water, and that always was curious to me. I guess if you're saying within the water industry itself, there's wastewater and clean drinking water, agricultural water, then it sort of makes sense to me a little more. Like, oh, okay, so then the ocean's a whole nother thing. But it really shouldn't be, as you started out by saying, right, Peter? It's all one aspect.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we talk about how all this water is, it's all used by all of us. And that's a really generic way of putting it. But honestly, water, the full water system that many of us learned when we were, you know, middle schoolers, it's very clear that the water that we get from oceans is the water that we have for our drinking water, which is the water that pushes our weather systems. And it's the water that that feeds a lot of our agriculture, which feeds us. And on the same vein, it's the same water that can be contaminated by our field, or can be contaminated by the way we use water in pharmaceuticals or industries. So to us, oceans are, it's not just its own category of the water industry. It's not its own little sector. It's so intimately tied to agriculture and to industry and to municipal water systems. And I think that as more attention is coming to water, we're hoping and we're starting to see that people recognize that water is really the center of, you know, this large climate change discussion that's going on and gaining or has a lot of attention, and oceans being a massive part of that discussion too. As you'd mentioned, Philippe Cousteau, who was on our chat, so much of what he talked about was how the oceans really drive so much of what we do. It drives, as I mentioned, our drinking water and our municipal systems and wastewater. But it also is so intimately tied to our global trade, and it's tied to our ability to sequester carbon, and it's tied to the biodiversity that we have in the world. And so we love hearing, for instance, tomorrow, what you're doing with Seaworthy Collective and with other ocean-based projects, trying to educate people on how important the oceans are and trying to get, for instance, funding to that space or get new projects to that space. We love hearing about those types of innovations. So so having guests like Philippe or being able to talk on a podcast like yours is, it's really exciting for us.
Thank you very much. I'm thrilled to have your insight into this, because I think to put it in perspective a little bit, we both deal with a lot of innovators or experts in everything, as you say, from shipping to cleaning water. And can you imagine there's definitely innovations that apply to, say, a wastewater treatment plant, but also to ballasting tanks of huge ocean going vessels. And then furthermore to smaller boats. And there's a lot of talk, I'm hoping that people have heard about invasive species in our lakes, and that comes from boats going from one to the other and taking with it in its ballast water often, or on the hull of the boats, these little critters that end up invading other spots that they shouldn't be in. It's a real problem. It's a problem for our water cleaning systems, for our lakes and our biodiversity, as you mentioned. So importantly, what your work is doing is creating this community and giving them a place to come and talk to each other, which I think a lot of time people sort of pish-posh the discussion, but that's an important piece as much as the doing, I guess, as long as you can get to the doing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we try to bring together these different voices within water so that, you know, the middle manager at a municipal plant is aware of a new, cheaper form of digital water or measuring water systems, or that a desalination plant owner or runner is familiar with a new reverse osmosis membrane that can better filter water or be more efficient for their system. So there are all these different stakeholders. There are these funders, there are entrepreneurs, there are experts, researchers, politicians, large customers and companies. All these stakeholders have a major part to play in water, and we're just trying to bring those people into the same space and trying to do so. I mean, hopefully these events are fun for people. I certainly have a good time meeting interesting people in water and listening to an interesting speaker for, you know, 30 minutes of my day. That's something that I can very easily take out of my calendar, is a monthly interesting lecture followed by a cool networking event that we try to make it a low level commitment for a very high reward of networking and education.
Absolutely. It's all virtual, so it's kind of easy to do. There's so much to unpack with what you're talking about. I wanted to go into the fund, but I'm going to save that for another episode, because I think there's a lot to talk about when it comes to funding these projects. And it is one of the biggest struggles I see startups dealing with. And the startups on my show have definitely brought it up. But instead, maybe we can talk a little bit about how you're driving the effort to keep people in the water industry and bring the brilliant minds, because I know you and I have talked about, you're part of this younger generation that you found your way into this for altruistic reasons, but there's also huge economic drivers. And I really am just so impressed that you got in and you've found ways to make impact. Would you want to talk a little bit about that? How great people like you don't necessarily want to work in water. It's not sexy, but we need it. So yeah. A little bit about that and how to get involved.
Yeah. Well, you're pumping my tires a lot here. So thank you for that. Thank you for the compliments. But honestly, it's, I mean, I don't think that I'm very, like, there are so many people who want to make their careers meaningful. You know, I'm definitely not alone in that sense. And I've found water to be such a central aspect of, like I said, human health and environmental health, which I'm extremely passionate about. And I tend to be an optimist about my generation and, you know, the generations younger than me, because I really do think that there is a central desire for a lot of young people to have their careers have meaning to something much larger, namely the environment. I think that a lot of kids are really trying to make sure that they're either helping the environment, or what they're doing isn't harming the environment or having an extremely negative impact on the environment. So, going back to what WaterCorps is doing, I think that that's a really a huge first step to making sure that people are aware of this, like you said, seemingly unsexy field to dive into. You know, there are a lot of cool ways that people can enter the water industry nowadays, I'd say. We can talk about how major companies like Microsoft and Amazon, they use an insane amount of water in their cooling systems. You know, I mean, I couldn't even put a number out there, but it's one area, for instance, that if I weren't in water, I would have no clue that people, that large companies like that, large tech companies, are utilizing so much of our freshwater sources. And
absolutely.
So even, yeah. And so even areas like that, or working for large companies that, you know, a lot of people early in their career want to dive into or work for large, interesting global companies. And there's a lot of need for people to be working at those companies, particularly in water. And so we are trying to, through WaterCorps, educate people on that, get different speakers who come from that those different sectors, really elaborate on how the water industry is extremely expansive. It's not just your drinking water and these, you know, giant facilities that deal with your wastewater. You know, no one really initially wants to go work in a plant that processes people's poop. Like, that's just a pretty big generalism that I think speaks to a lot of people. So there's a lot of ways that people can work in water, and we're trying to make sure that people are aware of that, and that people are aware of how many different aspects of our lives water touches.
I have to agree with you there. And I've done a tour of a Southern California treatment plant. And you know what I found was really fascinating is that they're working hard to drive internal change, to use more, I don't know how else to say it, cool softwares, and make things sort of more techy so that the younger generation will be really drawn to it. It's like you can do a lot of monitoring from an iPad, and that's all innovative stuff in water. So there's just like a slew of things happening. And I like your strategy to the education piece of Hydrodal. You're bringing in the people that you're right. We should be optimistic about. These are the people that drive the change for the future. I mean, I know people that won't shop a brand that doesn't align with their values, whether that means their water use in their textile industry or even food-wise. There's food companies that are really doing some pretty naughty things when it comes to water and their wastewater. So I'm going to definitely follow up with you and talk about how we could maybe bring a few more speakers to talk about these things. And
yeah. And tomorrow, one of the things that I'd worked on, I guess 2 years ago, was with this organization called One Shared World, where the mission was to gather voices from model UN groups. So usually kids up to 18 years old from across the world. So 40 plus different countries from a myriad of different, you know, income levels, to discuss a potential mock UN resolution on how we can better address water access and water purification and water quantity, quality, all those aspects. And I was basically just helping to facilitate that discussion a bit and put those all those ideas into words. And I mean, tomorrow it was absolutely, it was incredible to see the amount of voices and the amount of really passionate and intelligent young people across the world who do understand the problem that we're facing with water, you know, shortages, droughts, quality. I mean, we in the United States have, we have our own issues, but in many, many, many other countries across the world, their water issues are so fundamental. It's about not being able to even find clean water or retrieve clean water at a reasonable time. And there's so many collateral effects to that. And it harms especially low-income nations, and it harms especially women in low-income communities and nations. And so we gathered all these voices from young people, and we made this mock UN resolution. And it was, I mean, it's seemingly so simple and seemingly so, very important to make sure that we had all these changes, which just include, you know, a lot more funding, a lot more attention to water. We realized we had something there, and we decided to really utilize our network within One Shared World to locate politicians that are at the highest level of really the UN and even other governmental agencies, where eventually we were talking with the German and Spanish foreign ministers who were drafting the UN resolution for December 2021 on human rights. And we were able to actually include a full paragraph of our work into that UN resolution that was unanimously passed, basically stating that water needs more funding in countries. There needs to be a particular timeline and deadline for countries to prioritize water infrastructure, water purification, water access and creation into their national budgets, and for a need for international collaboration so that, you know, different water basins are protected and that different water basins that go across countries are treated properly and that there is communication among those countries. And that paragraph basically, you know, solidified the idea that global leaders need to put more attention to this problem, to water and to funding. And that was created by kids who are under 18 years old. And it was put into a unanimously passed UN resolution. So there are a lot of passionate kids out there, a lot of passionate people who are merging into the workforce. So I'm really confident that with a lot more attention and with some people who are aware of the water industry or aware of the potential to improve human health and environmental health and international cooperation, that a lot of those things boil down to being a water issue, and that there's a lot of great potential to solve a lot of those problems.
Yeah, for sure. That I got to point out that even if you're here in the U.S., don't think it's just Europe that has all these borders with water crossing. We have Canada and Mexico. We share borders as well. So there's a lot to do there when it comes to water.
Yeah, and even between states, I'm out in Colorado, and the Colorado River Basin has a lot of its own issues, even just between states in its own country.
I definitely know a lot about that, having lived in Southern California. That's an episode in and of itself to talk about the Colorado River and how many people draw from it.
Totally.
That's such a inspiring thing for me to think about, that young people, as you said, 18 years and younger, like to be able to have some sort of impact. And it's not like you have to do something major or know something huge. You can contribute a little, and when it all comes together, it has a big effect. So kudos to you on that effort. And I guess for being involved in all these different efforts that tie together so well, Peter, thank you. As for HydroDAO, we touched on the education efforts, which obviously I'm kind of fond of, and we touched on the collaboration and the advantages of bringing all the voices into the same space, which to me, the real essence of that is very hard to verbalize. I think you got to kind of see it to understand the synergies that get discovered when you get everybody together. I'd encourage people to check out HydroDAO, and I'm going to let you give them a way to reach out or join your Discord, maybe. Any words on how to get involved, or maybe some call to action of your own that you'd like to offer?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, well, thank you so much for having me on here. To get in touch with HydroDAO, you can visit our website at hydrodao.io. And it's really quick, easy to submit your information to join our community. You can come to our events, get our weekly newsletter, And I'll personally be in touch with you then if you submit your information there. So I like to actually have phone calls with a lot of people that come our way too. It's just really cool to meet people in the water, you know, all across water. So I'm fascinated to get to know you. If you send information to HydroDAO, I will certainly see it and I will reach out. In terms of a call to action, there's kind of an activity that I learned of that I just love, and especially it pertains to people in high income countries. And it's basically, I encourage you to take a step back and think about what would happen if the water from your faucet was no longer running. What would happen if the city you live in, the town you live in, was no longer sending water to your house or to your neighbor's house? What would you do? Where would you go get your water? How would you carry that water? Who else would be there? You know, how many thousands of people would be scrambling to get their water as well? And so, you know, in our daily lives, we really undervalue water and we take it for granted. But as we see, it's really at the center of so many key aspects of our society, even a really high-tech society. It's at the center of technology, like we talked about with Microsoft. It's at the center of our human health. And it's at the center of climate and climate change. So I really encourage your listeners to really think about their water. Think about how it's really the epicenter of everything we do. And so I encourage them to just be involved. Try to help promote water innovations in any way they can. And whether that's through policy, getting involved in political work, or just voting in how your water rights are used, or in things like what I'm doing and what I'm encouraging, which is private investing or getting funds to the right areas in water. So there's a lot of different ways that people can participate in water and improving any situation out there. And I just trying to encourage people to remember how valuable it is in our lives and how much we take it for granted.
Absolutely. That's music to my ears. I think the first step tends to be like educating yourself and basically just paying attention, like being aware. And I know when we've had some water boils here, I'm based in Austin, and you know, a good water boil is a good reminder. Or a couple years ago, you know, with a freeze disaster where we didn't have water, it's not a fun couple of days. So experiencing that on the long term would not be pleasant, to say the least.
I totally hear you. Yeah, that's a good personal experience to remind you of water's value.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you, Peter. Thank you very much for being on the show. I hope to have you back again when we get into some more chats about funds and financing all of this, because that is a big piece, of course. I will definitely put your link in the show description so people can join HydroDAO's Discord. And Discord, by the way, I just in case it got missed, is a chat platform, not unlike Slack or one of those kind of open chat platforms. And please tell them that Wavemaker sent you. And other than that, all I have to say is thank you so much for listening. And thanks as well to the American Shoreline Podcast Network for producing the show. Don't forget to let me know if you know of an innovator or watery thinker in this space that you believe is a wave maker themselves. Also consider sponsoring. Visit the ASPN network at coastalnewstoday.com/advertising. And I will see you next month.